Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
8 minutes after 9 o'clock, our heritage special with Sheldon, who's in studio with us. And that was, who doesn't know Lucky Dube?
Lucky Dube. So actually yesterday, as we ended off the show, we were talking about Ladysmith Black Mambazo and Paul Simon.
Yes.
And so I was like, let me just go and do some research, because like we ended off on a note that I wasn't fully prepared for, and the whole thing about exploitation of musicians.
Yes.
And all of that stuff. And so I went and looked, and Joseph Shabalala and all the South Africans who wrote music on the album were credited.
Yes.
So there are credited songwriters, and I think because the music was probably registered in the United States, mm-hmm. in South Africa, the rule is that you receive royalties for your entire lifetime plus 50 years after you pass away, mm-hmm. which means that whoever you've bequeathed mm-hmm. your
estate.
Music to will inherit those royalties. Mm-hmm. In the United States, I think the date is 75 years, which means that those artists will be benefited for their entire life plus 75 years. Mm. But it brings to question something else, which is musicians often in a recording studio, because everything is like, you get called and you're like, oh, this is the session fee, you're going to get paid R1,000 and you're going to go in and you're going to do the session. And it's all about the heat of the moment and you're there. A lot of pop music is not written. You'll get like an idea, like a chord chart, and you'll get the chords and that will be it. But you won't be given very much else. And you're in the studio and you're writing, I mean, you're performing and you're doing the thing. And then the producer says, you know, just come up with a solo line here, you know, or something
just
like that.
Give us some spice.
Yeah, just give it.
Just a little voice
something
to just give us.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I've heard the story before. Sometimes Sheldon has come in to record. I have accompanied Sheldon. I happen to know how to sing. No, that's not true. But mm-hmm. I'm just
hypothetically,
I am now.
Yes,
your story, Maisiki.
Exactly.
I am with you in studio, and you know what? We get excited, and you say, "Come on, Pamela, come on,
yeah,
come on.
Just
give us a line,
something.
Give us something."
Yeah.
And then maybe you know, I'm a bit excited. Maybe I am inspired.
Yeah.
And then I hoy in a line.
Yeah.
But the line makes the song.
Yes.
And then suddenly I want all the royalties.
Yeah.
And maybe I was never meant to be in the song.
Exactly.
And we were fooling around.
Exactly. And so that's the thing. I think what often happens is you're in the studio, you're in the heat of the moment, you get asked to do something, but actually what you're doing is you adding your intellectual property to that piece of music. You're altering it and you're creating something that wasn't there before, which could be like the next TikTok snippet that people add to something, or it could be something that a hip-hop producer hears and they sample that on a piece of music, and you're not credited.
You know, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes people may take for granted small little alterations to a song that make the song.
Exactly.
Was it not Michael Jackson's, who was it? It was Letambule.
Oh, yes.
Who was, I don't remember the lyrics. It was Liberian Girl.
She
added her, literally just her voice.
Yeah.
A bit of a whisper, not much there.
Yeah.
But that is
became
iconic.
The signature, yeah.
It was iconic.
And so I think artists often have to be very cognizant of what they're doing in a studio and realizing that if you're adding something to the composition, you actually are co-composing that.
Mm.
And those things need to be aired out up front before anything breaks, before anything
before
goes big.
We get famous.
Exactly,
and
or viral or anything.
How do you then, this is really, I think it's a technical question.
Yeah, yeah.
But the dance, was it Jerusalema? Where
the dance
became bigger than the song in a way.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole story about, well, why am I not getting anything from making the song popular?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the dance move made the song popular, and you know how it's viral.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the whole thing went viral.
Yeah.
And I think the important thing is, because that was also another one, where the story, when I was reading up about that story, I was like, whoa, there's so many conflation. And that's the thing. The music industry is such a complex beast that there are so many elements. Who are you? Are you the composer? Are you the performer? What are the rights that are accrued to the songwriter versus the performer? There are different organizations that regulate both bodies. So it's very complicated. And the best thing to do is right then and there, negotiate something. You know, I feel like I've added this. I think I should be given 10% of the publishing or whatever it is. And that needs to be negotiated up front so that it doesn't become a problem. Because once the horse is bolted,
Sheldon,
you're never going to get it back.
Would a choreographer have said, listen, I think this dance is going to go big? I don't think so.
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is, if you're adding intellectual property to something, if you are like value-added tax, if you're adding something to the product, you need to be credited for it. And if you're not credited for it up front, to try and negotiate that after the horse is bolted is almost impossible, and it becomes messy, and it's legal, and it's very expensive. So it's better to pre-negotiate all of these things and say, you know, guy, I was in the studio, I added that line, I feel that I've added to the composition, please add me as a co-songwriter.
Since today is Heritage Day and we're discussing music, a lot of the music, for instance, in South Africa, not just in South Africa, in fact, I think in many countries, a lot of the music sometimes has its origins as a song that is just a song that we all grew up singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And not necessarily having the real composers' names, because it's just a song.
Yeah.
And then someone comes and records the song. Mm. How do you then navigate that?
Well, so there's two things there. So the one thing is, if a song's been it's had its lifespan, which is,
but never recorded in a way.
Yeah, yeah. So it's had its lifespan. So it was the lifetime of the author plus the 50 years. That song goes in the public domain, and anyone can redo it. There's nothing preventing you from taking an old Beethoven piece of music redoing it.
Got you.
But and then there is another thing which our new Copyright Amendment Act deals with, which is like music that belongs to a specific culture, where it's like traditional music that belongs to, like, let's say the Zulu nation or the Sotho nation. Mm-hmm. And in that instance, that body of work is owned by that community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
cultural
yet to,
appropriation.
Yeah, then it's yet to be seen how the law will deal with it, because it doesn't exist in our law currently, but it is something that is in the new Copyright Amendment Law, which will protect.
It's still a bill, so.
Yeah, and the thing is that we often, you know, here in South Africa, a lot of South Africans sell their culture and their heritage for a pittance, and because 5,000 rand looks very attractive, because 5,000 rand is better than zero
at that time,
and in that process you're basically cutting a deal with the devil. You know, you're selling your culture to people for 5,000 rand or whatever it is, whatever the amount is that looks attractive to you. Even if someone throws 20,000 rand, let's say even someone throws 100,000 rand, that might seem like a lot of money, but in the long run, you could have a Lion Sleeps Tonight on your hands, which was a multi-billion generating track, and your 100,000, what is it worth then, you know, when you could have had access to millions. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. But anyway, back to Lucky Dube.
Mm-hmm.
The fascinating thing about this guy was that he started music from a very young age, brought up by his grandmother, who he said was the love of his life. His grandmother was everything to him. Single parent. The parents got divorced when he was very young. The mother was forced to go away and find work. And so the grandmother was left with the responsibility of bringing up himself and his two siblings. And actually, his name Lucky came from the fact that the mother had really struggled to give birth, and eventually was born, and she was like, this is Lucky. Mm. And so she called him Lucky Dube. But the interesting thing is that he actually started off as an R&B singer, and even did two Afrikaans albums.
I didn't know that.
So he had
that
two.
That is so cool.
And he had a whole like side hustle where he did two albums. I think it was, I forgot what the name of it was. What he called the act Oom something. Mm. Oom Fani or Oom something like that. But anyway, he had two Afrikaans albums. And only later on, because he discovered Rastafarianism when he was in high school, he started off as a gardener.
Yeah.
Dropped out of school, was a gardener, and then decided, I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to, you know, get a proper education. And there he discovered Rastafarianism and obviously played around with the sounds and whatever. But only later on his career, like, so he started his career in like the early 80s, but by the mid 80s, he was like, it seems like the audience is very receptive to my reggae music, and started doing this reggae music specifically because he felt that there was like a synergy between what was happening in South Africa at the time and the message of what reggae music is about, which is a social commentary. And the government wasn't very happy about this whole thing, so his first album was censored and didn't do very well. But he was like, I'm not going to allow this to stop me. I'm going to carry on doing my thing. And he persevered. The next album did very well. His album Victims, which was released in 1993, landed up selling 1 million units. Yuck. So he was no small fish.
Wow, 1995, that's a lot.
It's huge. In 1995, he gets signed to Motown Records, which is an American record label. Then he went to Warner Brothers and landed up getting some SAMA Awards and things. But in 1996, he was actually awarded the World Music Award for the best selling African artist in the world. So he was like massive. And I think people in South Africa don't realize the legacy of Lucky Dube. He's probably next to Bob Marley, one of the biggest selling reggae artists of all time. And he's definitely the biggest selling African reggae artist in history. And so like the legacy and the input that he added to music is incomprehensible. Like, you can't add a value to it.
We're having our conversation with Sheldon as our musician, analyst, scholar, musicologist on Heritage Day, as we look at really amazing stories of some of these iconic songs that you'll be hearing. Let me hear from you, by the way, 086-000-0959. What do you make of what we've just said, especially your memories of Lucky Dube? I think he's iconic, for sure.
Definitely.
And would love to take those voice notes on 0636-88-0959. Freshly ground. Shoo, you can't miss that.
Yeah. And what I really like about this is like an assimilation of many different like audio, like different genre influences. Like, you can hear very strong like ska, almost reggae sound in it, which reminds me a bit of like No Doubt in the 1990s. But and then you've got like the fiddles, which is giving a bit of like a country vibe, and then you've also got the kwela, like penny whistle sounds in there as well. So it's like a whole like cacophony of different sounds in one product. And I think that was the beauty of Freshly Ground, is that they were from all different countries in Africa. So there was a Mozambican in there, and a Zimbabwean, and South African. So there was a whole lot of different African nations within the band, but also a multiracial band. So it was like a completely different spin on thing, almost like Mango Groove 2.0, you know, like the evolution of Mango Groove. And so all the people in the band were accomplished musicians. Yeah. One of the musicians was an ex-drummer of Mango Groove. Yeah. Some of them studied overseas in Ireland. Some studied in the US. So there's like a whole lot of like... And then the lead singer, Zolani, she is actually a BA drama graduate from UCT. So it's like a whole lot of like different influences, and you can hear it in the music. And that was what the beauty of Freshly Ground was that the sound was so unusual, so progressive, so forward moving, and unlike anything we'd really heard before, and like a fresher approach to the sound. And they did very well for themselves. They were only together between 2002 and 2019.
That's so unbelievable.
Yeah.
And why? Do you know why that was?
Well, there doesn't seem... I couldn't seem to find anything as to why.
To be honest, they haven't ratted on each other, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. So it all just went very quiet. I mean, there's no, like, there wasn't a big announcement that the band was breaking up or anything. And just sort of everyone just went their own way.
No dirty laundry.
They released 6 albums, so that was quite good. And they're also the first act in history. So they received the MTV Europe Music Award in 2006, and they became the first South African act ever to get anything from MTV.
Wow.
Now we've had a few others that have come along the way, but they were the first to do it. And I just thought it was really nice to like follow the Lucky Dubé with this more like of an evolution of the reggae sound.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
Abdullah Ibrahim.
Because, I mean, Abdullah is a South African icon.
The Abdullah.
Yes. I mean, so that was the Jazz Epistles, actually, which was like this super group of Kipi Moketsi and Huma Sekela and Jonas Kwangwa, and obviously Abdullah Ibrahim, a.k.a. Dollar Brand, a.k.a. Adolf Brand. He changed his name a few times because also he converted to Islam. So he's one of two artists, and yesterday we had one who's a Order of the Ikamanga recipient in silver. Mm. I mean, people are selfish, eh? A silver one. I think he should have got a gold. But Order of the Ikamanga is like this very prestigious...
presidential orders.
Yes, it's an order given by the government. It's not necessarily given every year. There isn't an amount that they give. You know, it's not like they give 10 every year or whatever. They'll give one when they think it's deserved. And he is one of those recipients, which basically tells you that the guy wasn't just a musician. In order to get an Order of the Ikamanga, it's a strelitzia, hey? It's a flower, the Ikamanga. And it means that you've gone beyond just music. Mm. Your contribution has been more felt than just the music itself. And that's very clear by the music that Abdullah Ibrahim delivered. I actually watched him at the what is that jazz festival? Joy of Jazz. So I watched him at the Joy of Jazz. I couldn't believe I was actually sitting in the room watching this guy, because
tell me, you were all absolutely still.
Everyone was still.
You couldn't. You do not move. When Abdullah performs, because you will stop.
Okay, I didn't know that. But he was exceptional. Like, on stage, and it was a few years ago, so it's in his older age, but like, he commands the stage like I've never seen anything before. And to have someone in our country, I mean, we've had these amazing leaders in our country, and he's definitely a leader other than just being a musician. You know, like Desmond Tutu. I mean, like, on the stage, he just commanded that stage. The playing was immaculate. And I was sitting in awe. I wasn't expecting to be so moved by him, but like, sitting there listening, because jazz is not really my genre, but like, standing there listening to this guy perform, I was like, my goodness, there's a reason why he's such a great.
So what I mean, in your educated way of seeing these things, academically, what is it about him?
I think, you know, that whole Malcolm Gladwell thing, which is like the 10,000 hours. I mean, you can see that this guy has put in the hours. You know, like, he's
the 100 million hours.
He's done like more than his 10,000, and it's clearly evident in the way that he commands the stage, commands the instrument, he commands the audience.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you've been in it for as long as he has, and you are able to, you can suss out an audience. You know what that audience is going to give you, merely or basically based on previous experience. It's all muscle memory. So by the time you get to that level, you know how to maneuver through that situation. And he, I mean, he's an icon. His wife is also an Order of the Ikamanga recipient, Sarah Benjamin.
Yes.
And
there's a song for her. Was it Maria Makeba who wrote a song for her?
I can't remember. But and then the daughter, Sidi Ibrahim, is also a musician. She lives in New York, and she is a hip-hop artist, and she's considered one of the greatest underground hip-hop MCs in history. She's looked up to by people like Jay-Z and Talib Kweli. She is like an iconic hip-hop artist. So obviously talent is something that runs very deeply in that family.
Musical ear.
But I think with Abdullah and Sarah, the wife, it's the fact that they were able to... sorry, not Sarah, her name is Satima.
Satima Benjamin.
Yeah. Was the ability to transcend music into something that could coalesce a nation. Mm. And that song... Meadowlands, Manenberg, was this like unofficial South African hymn. And without saying any words, it encapsulated, because the song is basically an instrumental with some lyrical content towards the end of the song, but it basically encapsulated an emotion in the country without having to say anything. And for that, he was vilified in South Africa, not because of what he was saying, but just from what he was expressing. And eventually, after the Soweto riots, he was like, I can't agree with what's happening in this country. And eventually ended up leaving a second time, because he went to the US, got discovered by Duke Ellington, who organized a recording session in New York at Reprise Records, then came back to South Africa, had his daughter Tsidi at that time, converted to Islam, and then went back to the US again, and only came back to South Africa in the 1990s.
We've got a voice note. Take a listen.
Bafetu. I think when I'm talking about like Itube, we're talking about the real icon. Actually, the one guy who has not been celebrated well in South Africa. I wouldn't say in the industry, but South Africa has not celebrated the icon, the hero that he is. And I believe we owe it to him as the entertainment fraternity that we should celebrate his legacy. That guy has done marvelous wonders for us, and the message still keeps going strong. So, Bafetu, thank you for bringing this up today. Lucky Dube has been a stalwart, has been an icon. He is an icon of our own music. We should celebrate him. He is part of our heritage. Kintziyane ka movala.
So, Hot Sticks Mabuse.
Yeah, another icon.
Burnout.
But, you know, reflecting on that voice note that we received, Lucky Dube, actually, I was going, because when I was doing my research about these Order of the Ikhamanga recipients, I saw that last year Solomon Linda got a Order of the Ikhamanga, which is, I mean, Solomon Linda passed away many years ago. I think it was in the 1960s. So he got it posthumously. So I really do think that someone like Lucky Dube should receive an Order of the Ikhamanga posthumously. I mean, he was 43 years old when he passed away.
Isn't that incredible?
But 23 albums that he released in that period of time, which is a huge body of work.
Okay, we've got Ndata Selby on the line. I hope you can hear, because I think we... okay, Ndata Selby, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and our musician guru.
Hello, Ndata Selby.
Hi.
Yes. No, Pamela.
Yes, Ndata Selby.
I agree with you. Lucky Dube was an icon.
Absolutely.
You know, I was following him wherever... He has got a show.
Really?
Yes. I even went to see him at Limpopo at Libwa Home.
Wow, that is so.
I like that man. I remember the song. There are two songs that I liked so much. The other one is the one that said, "The cats and the dogs have forgiven each other."
That's very symbolic.
Yeah, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So, what did you like about him, Dr. Selby?
The message. The message in his songs. And his performance.
Yeah. Yeah, he had I mean, his stage presence was... He was as electric.
Yeah, very dynamic.
Yes, he was dynamic at the stage. You know, when that man was ascending the stage, the whole stadium was shaking.
Absolutely, Dr. Selby. Thank you. Thanks for those memories. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Selby.
Thank you.
I forgot to mention, as Dr. Selby says, the stage presence. Oh,
yeah.
Man, I mean, I think you would feel like the stage is shaking and moving.
But that's, I mean, that's what makes a big star like that. And that's what, I mean, and I think the artists that we've selected today are people that have like transcended just being music stars, and people that have become an integral part of our heritage.
Yeah.
You know, like they've added something. They've been able to tap into a zeitgeist that's larger than just the music, but also cultural and heritage. They've contributed to something much bigger than just the music.
Let's go back to Sipho Hot Sticks.
So Sipho Hot Sticks Mabuse is a very interesting character. He's still around. He's 72 years old now. Was born in Soweto. So one of the very few local people, because most of the other people are Cape Town or Mpumalanga or wherever, whereas Sipho was born here in Gauteng. He dropped out of school in the 1960s and funnily enough, when he was 60 years old, decided to go back to I commend you on... You know, like it's like a humbling thing, you know, after attaining such huge success to like go, you know what, actually, I've got some unresolved matters that I need to tie up. And he went back to high school, completed his matric, graduated, was an amazing example to so many people. And especially in a country where we've got huge illiteracy rates, it's a very strong message to be sending out to people to say, you know, an education is the thing that can that can alter the trajectory of your life.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a very interesting thing. But anyway, he started off very young at the age of 15. And although academically he had dropped out of school, he was like prolific with his musical tastes. Like he could play the flute, he could play the piano, the drums. He started off as a drummer actually at the age of 5, and that's how he got the name Hot Sticks, because he was so good as a little kid that they called him Hot Sticks. So other than being a phenomenal solo musician, he was also a very well-known songwriter and producer who ended up producing for many other artists, like Miriam Makeba had music produced by Akim, Huma Sakela, Ray Piri, Sibongile Kumalo. They all had songs produced and written by Ray Piri. But that song that we played was his like signature tune.
His song.
I mean, he was so successful with that track. Half a million singles were sold. You can build a whole life just on that one song. And that's excluding all the other songs that, you know, he's released and he, you know, have been successful for him. And that's the beauty of Sipho Hot Sticks Mabuse. Also an Order of the Ikhamanga recipient.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. 2005.
Yeah, 2005. Received his Order of the Ikhamanga in silver. Clearly, the government was being very selfish with these people who should have got golds. But anyway, Solomon Linda got a gold last year, 2023.
So now this next artist needs no introduction. I mean, is currently, I think, the biggest star.
One of the biggest stars, not only in South Africa, but in Africa.
Yeah.
I read a story that when he was... it was, I think, 1990. So he was born in the same year as me, actually. We're the same age.
Okay.
So 1976.
I bet you nobody was going to remember.
No, but it's fine. It's fine. I'm not. Hopefully, I'll be an Order of the Ikhamanga recipient, and you, Pamela. You know, because I mean, they do.
We will be.
They honor all of us.
I'm going to be your Stroy Masiki. I'll come along.
So, anyway, so Black Coffee. It was 1990. They were celebrating the release of Nelson Mandela. And this car veered off the path and crashed into a whole lot of people, including himself. And he lost the usage of his one arm. And I was like, really? I'd never noticed that before. And then I went and watched footage. He DJs and does everything
with one arm only.
So it's quite a thing. And because DJ is such a... You need access to more than one limb to be able to... And he is so proficient in being able to actually access everything with just the one arm. But anyway, phenomenal musician. Actually, breakthrough musician that has opened up doors for so many others. Although he's a younger artist, I think what he has done with being able to like transcend just like through his electronic dance music, but also adding other elements of R&B and like indigenous sounds into the music has elevated what he does to the next level. The song we've chosen is a song called Even Though. It was released in 2007. It was from his second album called Have Another One. And on the specific album was adding like tribal elements and EDM elements and disco elements, R&B into creating this new like sound. And although he's not like a legacy artist like Sipho Hotstix Mabuse, I think in the future people are going to look back and go, you know, this guy has been an integral part of like what heritage is today. And that's why we're ending off with him, because it's like, what is the future of heritage? You know, like we've got
and heritage. Culture is dynamic.
And evolving. And so I think it's like, what will look like in the future? Where are we going to? What are those sounds going to be? What is the representation of our identity in the music going forward into the future? And it can be a plethora of things. Yeah. And as we can already see, the sounds shifting and the people are assimilating different ideas. And over the last 2 days, we've been hearing of people like Anati and Vusi Nova and Black Coffee and then Sipho Hotstix. So we've looked at the past, we looked at the present, and we're now looking almost at the future of what those sounds are going to be like and what our musical identity, our audio identity, and how we're transmitting that message of our culture into the future is going to sound like.
Well, thank you, Sheldon. It was absolutely phenomenal. Thank you, guys. Hope you had a fantastic Heritage Day. We're going to leave you with Black Coffee, and I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.